across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning and welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nice to have you here up north on this Friday morning, June 21st, the first full day of summer. Now, full disclosure, I am getting an early start to the weekend. I've got a little family getaway planned, so I've got to look back at one of our interviews this week, and then we have two fresh ones, two fun interviews I've prepared for you as well. We will have Jim Santel, our regular Friday guest, talking about some legal cases of note, things that may have fallen between the cracks in news coverage of other, you know, felonious former presidents. And then we're not just going to talk to Dan Schumacher about sports and the Cubs and things like that. But in the case of Misery Loves Company, we have found another long-suffering Cubs fan and mutual friend of ours. And that would be Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News in Eau Claire. Bob is a news anchor now. He was sports director there during my time at TV 13 many moons ago. And we're going to talk a little sports, a whole lot of baseball, but much more, including what it's like to be a college coach and a college journalist trying to learn your jobs and do your jobs in a rather unique environment. Mark Jacob normally joins us this hour on Fridays. He will be back next week. Now, as I extend the weekend a little bit, I'll let you know that on Monday, Todd Alba will be sitting here guest hosting, and his guest will be Dr. Kristen Lyerly, because Monday marks the two-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, the repeal of abortion rights under Roe v. Wade. So you'll want to be around for that conversation on Monday. It'll also mark the return of meteorologist Brittany Merlot, as well as your morning weather report from Robin Tigerton. And no, it would not be Up North News Radio if I didn't tell you what a great idea it would be for you to go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and sign up for our daily newsletter, and be sure to follow our posts on social media. One of the most recent stories on the website is my reintroduction, if you will, to the Inflation Reduction Act. What is actually in this thing? And in the process, I offer up a recap of how we got from candidate Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan to what President Biden got done in Congress, the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the Inflation Reduction Act, and more. But first, one of the things we consider to be a core mission at Up North News, and I'm sure I'm speaking for Civic Media as well, is to offer some perspective, a little candor, some fact-checking when it comes to politicians and candidates. We, of course, are not alone in that. And earlier this week, we visited with Megan Rowe from Opportunity Wisconsin to hear more about their mission of communicating some of the truths about candidates and politicians to the Wisconsin voter.
We are a nonpartisan issue advocacy organization, and so we do work across the state to connect with folks to help them lift their voices and share their stories to advocate for policies that support working families and seniors across the state. And so we have been working since early 2020 on this mission. And over the last year, we've specifically been working to hold Congressman Brian Stile and Congressman Derek Van Orden accountable on some of these economic policies, as you mentioned.
And you do that for what reason? I mean, I kind of hinted at it already with the rhetoric versus the record, but when you cite Stile and Van Orden, you know, as relatively new members of Congress in battleground districts, what do you feel, how are you filling in the blanks for the voters there compared to what they may be hearing from the incumbent and the special interest money behind them?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that, as I mentioned, is a through line for us is talking about policies that impact working families and seniors. And over the last year, we really have felt that both Congressman Stile and Van Orden have taken votes or have been silent on issues that are really impacting folks across the state, particularly in the 3rd and the 1st congressional districts. And so we've been working over the past year to connect with constituents, to educate them about these votes that are coming up in Congress and helping them raise their voice and make sure that they are heard on these issues.
So one of your latest projects, as you mentioned, with Congressman Style, is a new ad that is talking about whether credit card companies should be allowed to charge higher fees. And so what are you saying about those members of Congress when it comes to the fees that credit card companies have been attaching onto our bills for years, it seems like?
Sure. Well, we all know that costs are high in some areas, and you know, we want to make sure that policies are enabling working families and seniors to be able to put food on the table to make ends meet. And the last thing we need is, you know, another fee taking away money that would otherwise go to pay our medical bills or buy groceries. And so recently, Congressman Style took a vote in committee that would have allowed credit card companies to continue charging exorbitant late fees on working families and seniors. And so it really boggles the mind why someone would think that was good policy. And so we recently launched an ad, as you mentioned, to hold him accountable for that vote and encourage him, should this vote come before the full House, to change his stance on this issue.
And so the campaign that you mentioned, you tell us more about it in an opinion column that you can find over at upnorthnewswi.com. The headline is, 1 year later, Representative Style and Van Orden still owe Wisconsinites answers about how they will fight for working families. The things that they need to do. Now, you talk about holding events and doing campaigns and highlighting the importance of these policies. I know that if Congressman Van Orden or Style were to be asked about this, they would, and this just goes to show you how legislation, you know, they give it every possible kind of name. Mm-hmm. They've got one that they call the Limit, Save, Grow Act of 2023. And again, when you have that kind of packaging, and then you see the commercials like, you know, Tammy Baldwin voted against the Limit, Save, Grow Act, or whatever the case may be. But the Limit, Save, Grow Act is not, the packaging does not necessarily tell you the whole story.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we can call it the Puppies and Rainbows Act of 2023, but colloquially it was the Default on America Act, because if your listeners will recall, you know, there was a period about a year ago where it felt like every week we were talking about the government shutting down and how it would impact Wisconsin workers and families, and, you know, members of Congress, particularly Congressman Style and Van Orden, were just digging their heels in and were refusing to compromise and refusing to support policies that would benefit the folks in their district. And instead, you know, they voted for this Limit, Save, Grow Act, or the Default on America Act, which would have been cuts to veterans benefits, reduced access to Social Security and Medicare, slashing of food assistance, and so much more. And so the two of them both voted for that, which thankfully, you know, with President Biden in the White House, that was never going to become law. But those are the types of votes that we're reminding constituents about as we help them share their stories and make sure that they're being heard by their members of Congress.
And it's not just the things that they are proposing, but the things that are maybe coming back up for renewal, specifically the Trump-era tax plan, which folks will recall Ron Johnson was instrumental in helping, you know, skew part of that tax break for something that helped, you know, put money in his pocket. But with Trump saying, well, it was a big success and we'll renew it if you elect me, we're finding out now that the actual price tag of that 2017 law, which was once said it would blow a $1 trillion hole in the deficit, and then the estimate went up to $2 trillion, the estimates are now, Megan, if I'm not mistaken, tickling $4 trillion. And if anybody had known that that was the price tag in 2017, you know, if they'd have been more honest about it, I don't think this thing would have necessarily passed the way it did.
Yeah, I would like to think that as well. But I think I've learned over the last several years that I can't predict anyone's actions in Congress anymore. But you're right. You're absolutely right. I think as folks were saying back then, this is going to be a huge problem for our country economically. And we're seeing that to be the case. And to make matters worse, instead of members of Congress coming to the table and saying, hey, let's tweak this. Maybe we can change some of the policies a little bit so it's not going to be such a hit to our economy. We have congressional Republicans that are full steam ahead on expanding some of these provisions and making them permanent, all the while refusing to do things like renewing the expanded child tax credit or some of the other tax policies that we know actually benefit Wisconsin workers and families.
That is such an excellent point that, you know, when the extended child care or child tax credit expired, and they're like, well, it's expired and child poverty went right back up. They could have extended it, but they chose not to. And yet in your op-ed that folks can find over at upnorthnewswi.com, you ask very fair questions such as, why do Congressman Steil and Van Orden still fight to extend Trump-era tax breaks for those at the top? Is that something that, in fact, they are continuing to sponsor and support?
Yeah. You know, we it's funny, you know, both Congressman Steil and Congressman Van Orden love to, you know, jump on their media outlets of choice and share their views on different things, but happen to remain silent when it comes to this idea of the Trump era tax policies benefiting the wealthy and well-connected and leaving working Wisconsinites behind. And not only that, they refuse to comment on all these policies, as you mentioned, the expanded child tax credit, that have proven to lift something, you know, upwards of 50% out of children out of poverty. They refuse to comment on those policies that are actually benefiting their constituents, but will love to talk about how they're going to continue to put money in the pockets of the wealthy and well-connected.
And to learn more about what Opportunity Wisconsin is doing, go to opportunitywisconsin.org. Megan Rowe, Program Director, thank you very much for the visit. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Again, Megan Rowe from Opportunity Wisconsin. Coming up next, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel joins us, and another fresh new conversation involving Dan Schumacher and Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News in Eau Claire. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Coming at you from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Now on this Friday morning, it's June 21st, and things have settled down at least a little bit, somewhat, whatever you would call it, for a former president of the United States, you know, in legal hot water. But we thought maybe we would have some time finally to take a look at cases that we haven't done recently, but are still key important cases in the judicial system with our friend and amicus host and former U.S. attorney, Jim Santel. Jim, how are you? Thank you for being here today.
Delighted to be with you as always, Pat. This is the both exciting and sort of nail-biting time, as we have talked before, for the Supreme Court. These are these weeks, these days, including this week, next week, and maybe even right around the 4th of July when our Supreme Court is issuing all these big ticket items and everything from guns and abortion and social media and Trump and other things out there. So hot time to be watching our nine justices in Washington, D.C.
Oh, without a doubt. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there are bits of this week's show that were pre-produced so that I could get my weekend started a little bit early. So barring some kind of breaking news since the time you and I talked, we're going to look at some of these overlooked decisions most recently. And one that you tipped me off to talks about a Supreme Court ruling that affirms the rights of Native American tribes to access more healthcare resources without surrendering control over their own tribe-specific healthcare programs. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Absolutely. This is a big case. It involves a couple of tribes, principally in the western part of our nation. But it does, as you accurately indicated, Pat, have an impact upon all the Native American Indian tribes in our nation, including the 11 federally recognized tribes right here in Wisconsin. This is, in the end, a money case. And it has to do with whether or not the tribes get reimbursed for some of their administrative costs to through something called the Indian Health Services. It is one of those kinds of wonky cases that lawyers love to talk about because it's finances and legal interpretations. In the end, it is undeniably a victory, a positive for our Native American populations, because what it means is ensures the fiscal integrity of their own medical programs going forward. Virtually all of the Native American tribes, to some greater and lesser extents, have their own health services for their enrolled members and others. And the question was whether or not they were required to pay sort of some collateral administrative fees. Supreme Court comes back and looks at the statute, looks at the basically the history and the entire corpus, if you will, of what's going on here, and says, no, the government does in fact have to reimburse the tribes for these administrative costs, which gives them more fiscal strength. And that, of course, translates into better health care for our Native American populations. A win all around, a big victory. It's one of the, again, in a long line of recent Native American Indian cases. But this one has to do with quality of life, quality of care, and health care for our tribes. So a big result, a positive thing for Native Americans in the United States of America. And of course, there are sovereign tribes, there are sovereign nations, and we embrace that as well.
So I would imagine then, because of that, it can sometimes be tricky, because so often the federal government will say, well, we're going to help fund this, but we also get a degree of, you know, control in return. And certainly if you are, you know, if you're looking to keep your autonomy as a sovereign nation, but you still appreciate the assistance when it comes to things like healthcare resources, I mean, you really have to thread that needle. I can understand the tribal hesitancy and wanting to make sure that things are on the up and up.
Well, that's exactly right, Pat. And that is also the thread that goes all through this opinion, all through the litigation coming up to the Supreme Court. You know, we have a long history. You know it very well. I do. Your listeners do as well, including an awful lot of violations of a longstanding tribal and treaty relations between the United States government and our sovereign nations. And recent cases coming out of Oklahoma that Justice Gorsuch wrote, for example, reaffirm that those basic trust relationships continue, and that what we said in years past are very important. And inside that is precisely what you just articulated, which is this notion that, yes, indeed, our tribes are sovereign, but they plainly have this connection to the United States of America. You cannot divorce one from the other. And based upon that longstanding treaty relationship, the tribal relationship with the government, it is that notion that we still have this obligation, this statutory obligation to ensure that our Native American tribes have, in this particular case, the funding, the fiscal support to keep themselves healthy and in a good medical condition as well.
And while we won't get into either of these other two examples that I think of today, we may want to at some point come back to two different things. One, it involves the Enbridge pipeline going through the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. And there's also an Enbridge pipeline case over in Michigan. We talked about it earlier this week about that case being moved from federal to state court. So that's one case. And then the other one deals with the Lac du Flambeau and their dispute with the adjoining township over roads and over easements. People hear easements, their eyes want to glaze over, but these are very important topics. And so I like that we got into the subject area with this case, and we're going to explore the other cases in the weeks to come, I'm sure, because again, there's got to be something other than Donald Trump to talk about when it comes to the law. All right. And then this other case is, okay, maybe it's salacious. Maybe we need something a little bit lighter, but do I understand your note right that the U.S. Supreme Court actually heard the case of an attorney trying to trademark the phrase Trump too small?
That is correct. And it is perhaps in a time when we're so focused on these other very serious cases, a little bit more lighthearted. But it also has a very interesting footnote that you and I have also talked about, Pat. This is an attorney who wanted to trademark this particular phrase. The salacious, silly part of this comes from the 2016 election when Marco Rubio and Donald Trump go at it about the size of their hands.
Remember hands, that? Yes, right.
Exactly.
Yep, I remember.
All of us are still rolling our eyes about the level of debate at that time. Anyway, this attorney comes back and says, I want to trademark Trump too small. He maintains it's based upon Trump's diminutive focus on policies. We probably know it's something other than that. In the end, the Supreme Court does two things. One is it says the trademark office, patent and trademark office, can deny him that right Why? Because the phrase includes the name of a person who is alive. That's one of the rules. 9-0. All the Supreme Court justices agree with that. He doesn't get his trademark. He can still use the phrase, just can't get a trademark. The reason why I think you and I wanted to chat about it was because there's this very interesting addition on some concurrences by Amy Coney Barrett and by others, Sonia Sotomayor, in which they raised this issue about whether or not this should once again be premised upon a look back to in time history. And Amy Coney Barrett goes after the majority, and Amy Coney Barrett goes after Clarence Thomas in particular, who is focusing once again about history and tradition of trademarks. And she says, what are we doing here? And I won't read the entire quote here, but she says, what is the theoretical justification for using tradition that way? 19th and 20th century evidence, dispositive of things that are going on today. She is attacking this fundamental notion that has wound its way through so much of Supreme Court history about premising the legitimacy of legislation on the past. And we think about guns cases as a major gun case. And Sonia Sotomayor makes it very clear. She's talking about Bruin. There's another guns case coming up, which we'll talk about, I suspect, Pat. And my sense is there's a fight going on right now inside the Supreme Court about this reliance upon the past as opposed to a living constitution. And it surfaced during the course of this otherwise sort of lighthearted, silly case about trademarking this phrase.
Living constitution. That's another concept we're going to come back to, but we've run out of time for this week. Jim Santel, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, Pat.
Coming up next, a brand new conversation with Dan Schumacher and also Bob Gallagher of WEAU 13 News. You're up north.
Send lawyers, cons, and money.
Well, it wouldn't be a Yacht Rock Friday if we weren't doing a little sail away, or, you know, I think that was Mr. Gallagher's choice, as we continue on a Friday morning with a couple of old friends here. And I can only say old because I'm older than them, but it's like having a couple of little brothers here. Of course, you're familiar with Dan Schumacher and also Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News. I have a tough time saying that. We always said TV 13 back in the day, but now it's WEAU 13 News. Mr. Gallagher, how are you?
Nice to see you, Pat, and nice to see good old friend Dan Schumacher. And we dropped the Peacock logo. So, yeah.
That's right. You won't even see a Peacock logo there, but, you know, brands change, you know. Where are you at? You're a little glitchy, but you're in a, looks like a shiny new building.
I am in a building. I'm inside the John and Carolyn Sonntag Center. It's the new facility that's been built down on Menominee Street on the near UW-Eau Claire. And it is a gorgeous facility. We're working on a couple part story on the opening of it, which will be opening up in the beginning of July.
Or as I refer to it, the house that Schumacher built.
That's right.
Because that man worked his tail off as athletic director at UW-Eau Claire to help with many other people, of course, to make that vision a reality. But Dan, now you're up in Northland College in Ashland, but I got a feeling you still got your little proud papa moments when you see what's behind Bob and when you see what's going up with that new Sonntag Center.
Oh, sure. But that's like with every project that I've done. I had local people that were down in Eau Claire last weekend for their daughter's softball tournament, and they used the softball stadium that I first built. It was my first project when I got there, was to build that softball stadium. Every project, I've built so many things at many different schools, but this one is a big one. I'm really happy for the football program, especially. I think that's the game changer to turn the corner for the program. I still hope that they wind up playing on campus. I don't think, as much as it probably I get abused for it, I don't think Carson Park is a recruitable stadium compared to the others in the league. But this, because of the indoor facility part, really kind of levels the playing field from a football recruitment standpoint. So I'm happy that the project is closing up. People have been very gracious about complimenting things. I mean, I spent 7 years designing the building, you know, as well as fundraising with Kim Way. So, I think it's a game changer as far as basketball goes. one of my old players, Zach Melvick, is the new head coach there. He played for me at Winona State when I was there. Won a couple national championships with him. So they got a good coach and for basketball to move into the building. And, you know, I got a signature on the main girder up there in the ceiling. So, yeah, I'm very proud of it. It's a great building. It's good. It's a game changer for all of the region, to be honest with you.
Is there a broadcast booth in one of those areas that we can name after Bob then as well? Because he's been involved in supporting Blue Gold Sports for how long you been there now? 40 years, Bob, it feels like?
30.
30. And the thing is, he's not even kidding, folks. That's the thing. It's
No, I mean, I just hope maybe I can get like a seat, you know, maybe a seat to sit in.
I think we can find one seat for you. I think we can work on a personal seat license or something like that. Bob and Dan put up with a lot of our grief because they are good Chicago boys who have truly made Wisconsin their home, but we know where their heart is still is. So let's begin the group therapy session, shall we, boys? I went and found an article that says the headline is "Don't Sleep on the Cubs, Continuity and Youth Delivering to Chicago as They Begin to Find Their Stride." Now, the punchline is that this article is from a month ago. And things, would you write that same headline today, Bob?
Well, we're on a one game winning streak. So, I mean, I guess there's hope.
I don't understand. 30 days ago, they were terrible. So, how did I write that article even 30 days ago? Because they were bad.
I mean, two nights ago, you thought, you know, I was going to bring some new material to your show, Pat. And, you know, when they blew the game the other night and the 3-run homer in the ninth inning. You know, Dan said I lost my mind. I don't know. There's nothing else I can lose right now.
Bob has never been shy about letting loose with his criticisms when warranted. And if I had a dime for every time he said, "That's it, I'm never watching this team again," whether it's the Cubs or the Bears or whatever, I'd have more than a few dimes in my pocket right now, Bob. But I don't see you making any apologies for your fandom.
But you know what? I keep it clean. I mean, I think.
Well, you're one up on Dan. Well, that's for damn sure. But yeah,
well,
I hear you.
Well, no. Probably remember a guy named Leah that coached the Chicago Cubs in the early 80s. His infamous rant.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, where there were probably about 75 expletives in about a minute and a half. So, I mean, you know that one, right, Mr. Schumacher?
Oh, Lee Elia, he was a madman. He was a madman. He went off. He would tell it like it is. They actually have some cutaways of him, if you look it up, on when he goes to make a change in the pitching because the pitching fell apart. And he basically calls him a no-good son of a gun. Get off the mound. Give me the ball. You know, that kind of thing. Instead of a pat on the back, say, "Hey, it's all right. Go ahead. Go find a bench seat." He rips him right on the mound.
He used to tear into the fans because he said, he goes, "You know, 85% of the world works, and the other 15% come out to Wrigley Field." So, but seriously, he said it a little bit more colorful than I just said.
I'm sure that he did. This is maybe a subjective question, but it occurred to me that with the Brewers changing leagues, was that 1999? I want to say, and you know, at the time, I was going to miss all of the Brewers White Sox games because there was quite a rivalry there. And as we saw recently, they're still, you know, still don't really like each other, but for this question's for each one of you, Brewers Cubs or Brewers White Sox, in your memory, which was actually the more spirited rivalry? And by spirited, I mean clearing the benches.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh man, I would say the Sox and the Brewers, to be honest with you.
I was going to say in the 90s, that got pretty heated between them.
It did. I would say that. I still feel like the Cubs and the Brewers rivalry really didn't take off until both teams got good at the same time. And that would be by, say, 7 years ago. I'm going to say seven, whenever the Cubs won the World Series. And then you had a good run with Milwaukee at that point, too. So I think it changed hands. I don't think it's as brutal as the Sox Brewers back in the day, but from a competitive standpoint, a wins-loss standpoint, yeah, the Cubs and Brewers are the ticket right now in that league or that division. So maybe not so much this year, but it has been in the past 5-7 years.
Well, I can remember back to the White Sox and the Brewers when they used to play at Old Comiskey Park and Old Stadium, And yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of White Sox fans whatsoever, even though a lot of members, actually Gallagher's, they grew up on the south side of the city that would probably punch me in the face, even though we're related. So, no, it's just, I would say, I agree with Dan that the Brewers White Sox was more spirited, but I'll tell you, it is heated now. And when Bud Selig put the Brewers in the same division as the Cubs, I really dreaded that because, you know, I did like the Brewers as a kid growing up because my three favorite players were Paul Molitor, Robin Yount, and Ryan Sandberg. So, you know, there you go.
Well, I'm going to bring this back to the Cubs, but I'm going to get there by way of the Bucks because we were talking the other day about Drew Holiday and how happy we were that he was getting a ring, but that maybe the Bucks, you know, trading him away and getting Dame Lillard, it had its good points, but it also had its bad points, and you never really know till, you know, sometime down the line, which takes me to Craig Counsell. And where are we right now? How much of the Cubs' woes are on bad decision-making by Craig Counsell? How much of it is injuries? And I'll be fair, how much of it is just too soon to tell? Bob, we'll start with you.
I've questioned a lot of his decision-making and his handling of the bullpen, but you know, I have to take a step back and say he doesn't have Josh Hader. He doesn't have, Williams in the bullpen, but I just think from a talent standpoint, you know, the Brewers, people got to just maybe take a, you know, look and see how talented the teams that he had in Milwaukee during his time with the Brewers. You know, I guess my biggest fault right now for the Cubs is the leadership. And that goes to their, their president in baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, who I've ran.
Yeah, you might have posted once or twice about that as well too.
Thanks, but I mean, go ahead, Dan.
Dan, the Craig Counsell, boomer bust.
I thought of this. I was thinking about this watching when I watched the game last week at some point. I was watching the Brewer game, and you know, how much was the success with the Brewers, and maybe preventing Counsell from making some stupid changes with the bullpen and you know, pitching changes during the game, was Pat Murphy in his ear. And look at how well he's handling his staff right now, his pitching staff, his hitting, getting people in the right spots and making, you know, how much of the Brewers' success under Counsell was actually because of Murphy?
You can't even see my notes, and that was going to be my next question. It was giving Pat Murphy his due, because wasn't Murphy Counsell's coach at one point?
Yes. It was at Notre Dame too, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right, at Notre Dame. So, Bob, you agree, Pat Murphy, this isn't some fluke?
No, not at all. And, I mean, I think the way the Brewers play baseball, the way they run the bases, the way they play defense, the way that, I mean, you know, he hired Ricky Weeks as his bench coach, and it just sounds to me like listening to some of the interviews from the locker room is that these guys will run through a wall for Pat Murphy. I'm not saying they didn't run through a wall with Craig Counsell, but the one thing that I watch in watching 75 games for the Chicago Cubs with Counsell as the manager is they don't play with any fire or any sense of urgency. And you know, Counsell, he sounds the same every single post game. And you know, I guess, you know, give Murphy his due, because I think they really like playing for him, and they play with, they got something to prove, or like a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah. We are talking to Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News, one of my old colleagues at the TV station. He was sports director back in the day. Now you hear him, or see him rather, doing the news. I see him bright and early, 4:30 every morning. You know, there's this smiling fit. Bob, did you ever think you'd be doing news at 4:30 in the morning?
Hello,
I don't know if you've used the same line, but I said, you know, at this age, I wake up that early anyway, you know, so you may as well pay me to get up and pee, you know, and then I'll go get some work done as well.
Yeah. Gary, that you actually just said that reference about since I, you know, I'm up several times during the night as it is.
Yeah.
Although I will, to be fair, your wake up time, your alarm is a lot earlier. I wake up and turn the TV on and see you. When does your alarm go off?
It goes off at 2:45.
Ouch. Oh, that's about the time Schumacher's getting home. I mean, it's...
Oh, man, you got to go there? Dan, really? You got to go there?
Because you're always working. It's work. It's all work for you, buddy. It's got nothing to do with fermented malt beverages at all. And Dan Schumacher as well. And for folks listening, saying, hey, where's Mark Jacob? He will be back next Friday. But we had a chance to finally visit with Bob and Dan and put them together, do a little group therapy over the Cubs and do a little bonding. But Mark will be back next week as well. I got a minute or so before we go to break here. And I don't want to spend a ton of time on it simply because, you know, a statewide show, but this one Eau Claire question I got to ask. Bob, you heard what Dan had to say about moving football from Carson Park back to campus. Do you foresee a future where Carson Park is still a home of all these high school games, but maybe the Blue Golds only play at Carson Park like once a year and make an event out of it or something?
That I wish I could predict the future on that one. I do agree with Dan that I think they might be better served, the Blue Golds, that is, to play on campus.
I mean, half the stadium is built already. I mean, when I left, we hosted our first track meet in 25 years. You know, you're just bleachers in a massive press box away from having a home stadium. You got the second largest parking lot across the street in the city. You know, that was my vision. It's the one piece that I didn't finish before I retired from there. But, you know, Carson, if you get in the bowels of it, I mean, no, nobody showers there. Nobody does any. I mean,
right.
You can't even put, you're not even allowed to put plug in a heater in November during the cold games. I mean, you can't because you blow fuses.
The facilities are definitely different these days.
Sorry, Dan, about blown fuses.
Yeah, Dan knows all about blown fuses. More with Dan Schumacher, Bob Gallagher next. You're up north. Back on Up North News Radio with Dan Schumacher and our special guest, Bob Gallagher of WEAU 13 News. A couple of Chicago boys here where we just got done talking about a lot of sports, and now we're going to infringe on Dan's normal territory to continue the conversation with Bob for a bit for folks that don't know him or just know him as that guy on TV. When did you leave Chicagoland, and when did you first come to Eau Claire? And wasn't your stop before that Rhinelander?
Yes, that was a very brief 7-month stay in Rhinelander until they asked me to leave. I thought I knew everything at the age of 22, but I didn't. So I went back down to Milwaukee, where I went to college and worked at the NBC station down there, WTMJ, as a producer and sports producer editor, and did mostly everything was behind the scenes. And then got a phone call and. Actually, from Bob Brainerd, who, if anyone knows anything about Wisconsin sports, I mean, he's still very visible on, you know, the WIAA, and he broadcasts games across the country for the NCAA. He used to work in Eau Claire at WEAU. He told me about an opening in Eau Claire in 1994, September 5th or 6th. I drove all the way up, met a guy named John Hofflin and Judy Clark, and the rest is history.
You know, when you mentioned Bob Brainerd, I saw him last week as part of the 30th anniversary for Bill Schroeder being in the broadcast booth. Yep. And I mean, look, you're an institution for Eau Claire TV, for sports and for news. But likewise, for watching all those play-by-play guys, all those partners over the years who went through and worked with Bill Schroeder, it just tells you the caliber, the high caliber of talent that still goes into sports journalism. And Bob, is that something that, I mean, do people still ask you about that? Do people still want to be sportscasters and sports journalists?
Oh, I think they do. I mean, a lot of kids, ask me how I got my start. And I said, well, I was a failed athlete. You know, I knew when I was 15 that, you know, I wasn't going to go pro. So, but no, yeah, kids ask all the time, like, how did you get in to what you're doing? And, I'll be honest with you, I got lucky, got an internship when I was in college and, at a TV station, and, I got hooked. I mean, so, but, you know, it's, you know, but back to, you know, you just, you know, guys like, you know, I just want to touch on the great announcers that the Brewers have had through the years. I mean, my goodness, Matt Vasgersian, he might have been my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, his home run calls were just epic.
Bob, or I'm sorry, Dan, as well. I mean, when you were at Eau Claire, you definitely ran into your share of Cub reporters, you know, who had to cover Blue Gold games. And do they even tell you about that extra part of the job? Like, along with coaching all these kids, you're going to have these rookie reporters, you know, sticking cameras or microphones in your face. And that had to be, at what point did it get from being an annoyance to maybe a teachable moment?
You know, when anytime during the hiring process over the 10 years I was there, I would warn them, you know, this is not Platteville. It's not even Whitewater. No matter how much Whitewater won, they still didn't have the everyday grind of media, either TV, radio, newspaper, all that kind of stuff. So I warned them, you know, that I'll be the first one to admit it. It's probably one of the leading reasons why I walked away from Eau Claire, because I couldn't take it no more. I couldn't go to a restaurant. I couldn't go have a beer without somebody tapping me on my shoulder and want to talk to me about something. I mean, success drives all that. That old saying, you know, you could keep the fame. I love the money, but keep the fame. The football coach has got every Monday or Tuesday has to do his briefing with the press and questions for the week, upcoming opponent, post-game show, radio post-game show. I mean, when you're a basketball coach, a football coach, that has that high visibility, it becomes a grind. And you know that it's not as glamorous as people think. That's all glamorous. It's
no,
really not. It's really not, man.
And it takes a lot to keep your wits about you when you're in that public eye all the time, Bob, which takes me to you and Bo Ryan, because I know that you knew Bo, and you've worked with so many other coaches over the years. Again, interviewing them. I was with you in some of those, you know, locker rooms interviewing folks, and you see every flavor of journalist out there now, but you also see every flavor of coach or manager having to put up with that.
Oh yeah, Bo Ryan was just, you know, he was a soundbite made in heaven. I mean, because, you know, if you asked him a stupid question, he would definitely call you out on it and say, you know, I expected better questions from you, Bob. You know, I agree with Dan, though. I mean, there is a Eau Claire is a different animal when it comes to coaches, you know, being a Division III university, dealing with the media, because they get covered and treated as if they are a Division I university.
That's right. That's what I would say. I would say that, Bob. I agree 100%. I was at Chicago State, Division I school. I could barely get my scores on the news. You know, in Eau Claire, if it's not about the Packers, it's about the Blue Golds is the lead-in for the sports. So that's what I tried to exasperate to every candidate, that this, you become, it's a different place, and it's different for a Division III school. Now, lacrosse is probably very similar in our league, in the WIAC, of that kind of treatment, because they've got television stations down there, daily media,
right,
talk radio. It's very similar, but nowhere else in the entire WIAC has the media atmosphere that lacrosse and Eau Claire have.
Well, I mean, there's been people, Dan, as you know, the Bob Bradoviches of the world, and
yep,
you know, Justice Cleveland's that, you know, that I was fortunate to pass the torch on to, and, you know, one of the hardest workers I've ever known. They love sports and they're passionate about sports, and that, you know, that helps too. I mean, that is, you know, so important, you know, that, you know, I think Eau Claire is really lucky. I just got to share the really quick story about going in the locker room still, Pat, and, you know, you went to the Rose Bowl with me, and was able to go to a Packer Bear game with me once. And, you know, he said the best thing about being in the locker room and seeing that the Packers, and he told this to his friend the next day, back at work in Chicago, is that there's the one undeniable fact in this world, that not all men are created equal.
I was going to thank you for the opportunity to go to that Rose Bowl game, though it always is followed up by the fact that the very next day we went to Candlestick Park for that Packer game, with Terrell Owens making that catch right on the goal line. And my being so stunned standing there at the goal line that I forgot I was still holding the microphone. You were running to the center of the field to get the shot of the coaches shaking hands. And I looked like a cartoon character being pulled by that microphone as you were running with it. But it was a great trip. It was a wonderful opportunity.
We were a good team.
Batman. God, we were, and I appreciate it so much. Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News from the Sonntag Center in Eau Claire, and Dan Schumacher is always from Northland College up in Ashland. Guys, this was a real treat. Thank you so much for indulging me, and have a great weekend.
Good to see you, Bob.
Yep, see you, Dan. Thanks, Pat.
You bet, and thanks to all of you for joining us for Up North News Radio on this Friday morning. Have a great weekend. Todd Alba will be here Monday. I'll see you Tuesday morning.